Hello.
Well, hi, and welcome, everybody. This is Dave Kruger. I'm excited about our group, and thank you all, those of you who have sent back responses to the couple of questions that I asked in an email earlier today. What's the most important question you'd like answered during this series? And then secondly, if you were to walk away saying it's one of the more valuable seminar series, what would you most want to get out of it? Thank you for thinking about that with me. It helps to inform some of my discussion, so I'll give you a heads up in the beginning. If I deviate from the outline, I'm looking at the same outline you are and talking about it, but if I deflect from that, it's because I'm responding to some questions and integrating that. So what you want to cover will have some importance, and I want to incorporate that and already see some requests for case illustrations and that sort of thing. So welcome. Thank you all already for managing the background noise, *6 mute. When you're ready to talk, unmute *6 again. I'll reserve some time at the beginning for discussion and at the end for question and answer discussion and clarification. So do any of you want to respond now if you haven't had a chance yet through your email correspondence to answer these two questions? What's the most important thing you want answered during this series? And if you walk away, what would you most value walking away? Anyone want to address either or both of those?
Good evening, Dave. My name's Kendall. How are you?
Welcome. How are you? Thanks. Go ahead.
Good, thank you. And I'm sorry, I did not see the email earlier today.
It was late. It's only
okay.
A couple of hours ago.
So I have been doing, in the past couple of years, a lot of mindset training and vision boarding and visualizing success, if you will. And I always know a little bit about how the brain, how the neuroreceptors can be rewired and how that actually works given time. But I only know a little bit about it, and I'd like to be able to verbalize it in a professional way, not just that I know it works.
That's great. Oh, so strap your seatbelt. We're going to be doing that, but I also want to make it experience near and practical, because while we're doing training and we're talking about it, you'll each be doing work with your clients, so you won't be educating them. Here's a preface of some of the things that we'll talk about, and also some of I see from the registrants, I see some old buddies and there's some new yet to be buddies. Here's something that is important from a mind-brain perspective. Giving information is not a way to change anyone's mind, because someone has already in their brain and mind an anatomical reality for the beliefs, facts, and information that they have, so that you don't just suddenly overwrite something that's already there. So here's how that works. You're in a conversation with someone, and you offer your belief or your idea or your suggestion. Now, immediately, that person is going to compare it to the belief or the idea that they already have. If it fits, they're going to find a way to confirm it, confirmation bias. If it doesn't fit, they're going to find a way to refute it. So what that means is that someone is going to be even more entrenched in their original position. And what we know now from some studies, people who are more intellectually flexible will end up even more entrenched in their original position, because they've either confirmed it or worked to refute it. So that's the boomerang effect. So that's why we want to think about, in working with clients, understanding more about how the mind and brain and performance sciences work, so that we can engage someone, because so many of the ways to facilitate change are really contrary to the way the mind and brain work. So that's what we're going to be talking about, some very practical application.
I love it.
Thanks for mentioning that. So now, after that, does anybody else dare ask or offer anything? Anyone else? Well, if you have a chance, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, this is Magdalena. I was just going to, I think you're doing this, and I just wanted to confirm. I've gone through some of the notes for today's session, and I love that you have the different aspects laid out. This is the perspective from neuroscience. This is the perspective, the different perspectives. I love that. I presume, maybe boldly, that if you're talking to us, you're going to correlate those and show how they balance each or how they work together. That's the big thing for me, is how it integrates.
Well, if you get your money's worth, the answer better be yes, because the reason we're doing this is so that you can be more effective and help your clients create a better and better story. And that's what's important, is the application, because and let me finish what I was saying earlier, and you remind me of it. if information was enough, we'd all be very thin, we'd work out every day, we'd eat mostly vegetables, we'd have a lot of money saved up for the future. And a lot of librarians would be billionaires. So information is not enough. So what we're going to be doing is looking at how to really understand in a dynamic way and convert it into meaningful conversations with your clients, with your client's story as the point of reference. Because that's what you're doing. You're not providing information. You're not teaching. You're not training. I assume you're doing mentor coaching with a client. That means working with a client with their point of reference to develop their story in a step-by-step way. Because that's what will create change. Having a good idea, having a goal, is not what creates change. That's not going to work as well. Winners and losers have the same goal. What makes a difference is having a system. And what we're going to be talking about is the systematic application of what we can best do in coaching with our clients to help them create a system that they take away that will inform them. Because when you're working with them and helping them revise and create a new story, you're helping them download and create a new operating system. So that's what we're about to be up to. So here's the premise before I go off onto lecture mode. 90 to 95% of our operating system is unconscious. So that means that we really need to understand, because just the conscious part is not going to be what's most valuable to our clients and what's most powerful for your work with clients. And we're going to talk about how to understand that. So let me go on lecture mode, and I'll reserve some time at the end, jot down any questions or clarifications that you have. And we'll come back and have a discussion. And I value this very much. And remember to send in responses to those questions that might be of most help to you. And I'll incorporate discussion in some ways that may even be recognizable in our discussion. So I'll put us on lecture mode so you don't need to worry about background noise. But we'll come back for a discussion a few minutes.
That's Dr. Kruger.
Yes, I'll talk to you if you call me Dave. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. My apologies, Dave, and thank you for that. This is Brad Swanson. I'm in Maine on the East Coast of the U.S. And,
okay.
I just wondered, is this live video, or am I just calling in on the phone, and that's how these seminars will be broadcast?
We are live, my man, so I can respond directly to your question. Now, yeah. I'm glad you reminded me. This will be, or is being recorded. It will be posted by tomorrow morning. So if there's anything you want to go over or don't understand. So at that link that you were sent, that you mm-hmm. downloaded and printed, hopefully the outline and yes. the work pages, that's where the four ports will be that the recordings will be posted. So you can go over those, or if there's some time that you absolutely can attend lifetime, they'll be there.
So
okay, does that answer your question?
Are you video live or audio live?
Audio live, teleconference.
Okay.
You ain't seeing me, are you?
No. Well, I was hoping I would.
We do. I won't go into the whole reasons that we do. Audio, it involves, there are people from different continents, different parts of the area, from farmland in Texas that don't have the bandwidth, I know these
I
things,
understand.
That don't have the bandwidth to, so I'm going to put us on lecture mode and talk about what we're supposed to be talking about, so hold on.
Thanks very much, appreciate it.
Okay, welcome to this four-part teleseminar series. To apply the mind and brain and performance sciences to strategic coaching. And I also want to add some more recent research and writing about specifically the performance sciences. I appreciate the responses to the questions. I welcome more. For those of you who would like to send them to me by email. So just as an introduction, in strategic coaching, the hardest thing we do, I think, is to help someone make significant changes in their life or business stories. Part of that's because so many of the methods to facilitate change, as I already mentioned, are contrary to the way the mind and brain work. So in our first seminar, we're going to review and integrate some important disciplines, bodies of work, to develop a scientific system of mind-brain behavioral change for success. The next three seminars will apply the principles to strategic coaching to make changes that last. So in the last few years, we've seen revolutionary changes in our knowledge of the mind, brain, and performance sciences that we can apply to strategic mentor coaching. These innovative new frontiers can be synthesized and integrated to help us become significantly more effective in our daily interactions, our self-regulation, as well as our effectiveness as a coach. So the operating systems of our minds and brains are not fixed, but they can be changed and transformed. We can rewrite mind software and rewire brain hardware to create new behaviors and new stories. We can engage in collaborative, co-created experiences to enhance our clients' success. So by integrating these sciences into the art of mentor coaching, we co-construct a new story with the client. We shift from problem to possibility, from teaching to experiencing, from telling to listening, from observer to participant, from educating to collaborating. That's the framework of the engagement that we have with each client, is that of collaboration. And I'll come back to that, because that makes what we do as a professional unique among all the professionals in terms of working with our clients. These foundational components make coaching unique from every other profession. So let's first look at operating systems. Behavioral patterns, belief systems are downloaded, especially from early on, parents, teachers, society, for the first several years of life, to establish the foundation of an automatic system to operate without observation or awareness. As I mentioned, 90 to 95% of our behaviors and core beliefs are pre-programmed in the unconscious mind and operate on autopilot. Now, we observe the derivatives of these. We never have to go back in coaching to look at or examine problems or history or issues of the past. We leave that to therapy and counseling. But here's the principle that I think is so important. In the present moment, which is exactly where we focus in coaching, every algorithm that's important in terms of thought, feeling, behavior, attachment will be revealed. Often it will be revealed in the process of the engagement with you, the coach. This is where you earn your money. Because as you know, when you've been coaching, it's easy enough when somebody says, well, you know, I have some time management problems. I just need to work on somebody with a schedule. You can do that after the first two classes of training. That's not where the real issues will emerge. And we're going to talk about that. So what that means is we can create two stories simultaneously that go in the opposite direction. The surface story, that 5 to 10% of the operating system, are conscious intentions and aspirations. This is what I want from life. These are my plans. Now, the shadow story that can ghostwrite behavior is, well, I really can't get what I want, or the system keeps me from doing what I need, or I don't think that I have what it takes, or I can't charge my full fee yet. Another example, the surface story, I want to create wealth. The shadow story, I don't think I have what it takes, or some people were born to have money. Now, many of these shadow stories are not conscious, and when they go in the opposite direction of the surface story, there can be a stuckness. So one of the first steps in mentor coaching with the brain and mind is to know ourselves quite well, to know our own story, to have our own voice in its construction. From Benjamin Franklin in Poor Richard's Almanac, there are three things extremely hard: steel, a diamond, and to know oneself. Mentor coaching requires us to be insightful, reflective, and self-observant, to have mindfulness of ourselves in order to be empathically attuned to the mind and experience of a client, because this is exactly what we're helping the client do, is to develop that self-reflection, that capacity for empathy, himself or herself. A couple of recent studies in Scientific American Mind and Harvard Business Review studied executives and what were the factors determining success of a broad range of executives. The number one factor, more than the next three combined, the capacity to self-reflect and self-regulate states of mind. Now, that was applicable to executives because that's all they studied. I think it's the same for everyone, and we're going to talk about that beginning next seminar, is how to regulate states of mind. So I want to consider now an overview of contributions from different fields and then bring them together to apply in an informed strategic perspective for facilitating change. And remember, as we heard the question, if this doesn't make a difference for you about how you talk with a client, it's not going to be helpful. So let's first look at contributions from psychology and psychoanalysis. And some of you guys know this is where I came from after 25 years of practicing psychiatry, psychoanalysis, being clinical professor at Baylor College, made a transition, early retirement, and then did training to become a mentor coach. So that's what I've been doing for a while now. So from psychology and psychoanalysis, here are some contributions. Empathy, the listening perspective and position from inside the client's experience, the resonance of the client's subjective reality of how they think, feel, process, and attribute meaning, and to engage clients to develop this empathy for themselves. Second, a theory of mind. This is all in your outline, so you don't have to take a bunch of notes and just can kind of listen to see if it makes sense. A theory of mind is the ability to see the world from another's perspective or vantage point. It's useful for us to construct that mental model of our client's thoughts and intentions in order to understand their behavior in a better way from inside their experience. Neutrality. This is from psychoanalysis. Remaining equidistant from both sides of a client's dilemma or their ambivalence or from the surface and shadow story. Not taking sides, but allowing the client to resolve the dichotomy because they've created both for example, the shadow story and the surface story. They may want to focus their energy to create just one and the best one or a better one. To learn from the old story, the past teaches the present so not to repeat compromised parts of the old story. When an emotion becomes a foreground issue, especially when it derails progress, it has to be dealt with first to regulate a state of mind. Regulating states of mind and managing emotion are crucial success strategies. Usually, when you think about working with a client presents something at the very beginning of a session, State always comes first before strategy and story. A client says, you know, I've been just so overwhelmed by all of this. Here's my dilemma. It's so easy to want to get focused on the content and on trying to fix it. But the first presentation that may be most important is to establish that empathic resonance with the client and simply resonate with, you know, I hear how overwhelming that's been for you. So here's a little insight exercise. Take a sheet of paper, draw a circle on that sheet of paper. Inside that circle, put a stick figure. Now, that stick figure is your client. Your challenge is to get inside that circle, because outside the circle, the client's not going to listen to you very much. Your challenge is to get inside that circle, to share their experience, to resonate with it, so that together you've created a common foundation to proceed. Let me tell you the simplest and the most elegant supervision I've ever had in this regard. This was back in the day when I was doing psychoanalysis, worked with a woman executive, offered her an interpretation that I thought was going to be really helpful. And she paused. And the pause continued. I wondered what was going on. And finally, she raised up on one elbow, looked back at me in the analytic chair and said, "No, Kruger, first you've got to be with me before I can go someplace new with you." Simple, elegant, profound. That's what we want to do with every client. We have to be with that client before they can go someplace new with us. Otherwise, it converts it into information or instruction. Another huge success strategy, understanding our own dynamics and the dynamics of others. No matter what a client comes in with and consciously focuses on, the most important issues will manifest in the process of the relationship. This is the intersubjective experience that two people in a relationship co-create a relationship, a third entity. The co-created third, that has the power to transform. That's why we're going to come to know anything in that unconscious operating system that gets in the way of someone's success or effectiveness or connectedness, because it's going to show up with us. Everything that's important will manifest in the relationship with you. To say that a different way, a client is always showing us exactly what it's like to be him or her. We'll come back to that. Positive psychology and emotional intelligence moved us to see health as much more than the absence of disease, and to form a foundation of our focus on possibility rather than problem. We're going to revisit that as we talk about mindset next seminar. Cognitive behavior therapy, currently the most widely used talking cure in America at least, holds that it's not necessary or even important for someone to return to the origins of a problem in order to overcome it, but it's more productive to focus on correcting the present and moving forward. This is much closer to our focus in mentor coaching. It's the choice architecture of this present moment. So we focus on now and next. And we may even focus on the exception rather than the problem. So rather than giving energy to the problem, to understanding the problem, we may focus instead on the exception, which is to say the solution. The result, changes occur more rapidly. There's some elegant studies about this, so I won't take time to go into. Now, here's a specific application from psychoanalysis for us as mentor coaching. Transference is the repetitive ways of organizing current experiences based on past experiences. It's the organizing process of how we perceive, process, and attach meaning to people and experiences. Transference simply means we use software already developed in the past to read a current experience. Now, most of the time, that's immensely helpful. We can immediately see the patterns, the experiences, look at intuitive responses, and respond. But sometimes, if we're using software that's outdated, it's not going to work as well. So this is what we want to think about in coaching. We don't bother the old story until it bothers us. That is, we don't engage. But if necessary, we address a belief or an assumption of the old story just enough to inform a present choice, rather than repeating the familiar one. So this is part of the unconscious operating system. You know, unconscious biases, blind spots, inattention, a whole number of things that may need to be addressed with a client. We'll talk about how to better do that. A couple of different kinds of memories are activated in a relationship, explicit or factual, and implicit or procedural. The coaching relationship will activate the old behavior patterns, the old story, alongside the new story being co-created. This is what offers an in vivo opportunity for us to understand and help retranscript behavioral and attachment patterns. So here's an application of what that can mean. When I say a client is always teaching us exactly what it's like to be him or her and demonstrates what needs to be known so that we can together collaboratively explore that with the client. And this is from a true story not too long ago. If you're working with a CEO who has annoyed and alienated everyone in the executive suite, and this happened and just before being fired, she was referred to me to say, well, let's give Kruger a shot and see what happens. Guess what? She began annoying me in the same way that reportedly she had annoyed other people. She was doing exactly what she needed to do. She was showing me exactly what it was like to be her, so that rather than respond, they had helped me and warned me basically to put my ego in a blind trust when I worked with her. I could collaboratively work with her to understand what she was doing. Now, we'll talk about how to do that because it's not something you can do in a first session. But this is the process that comes alive that shows both of us what needs to be addressed. So we have to be open to that mutual reciprocal learning and not impart our theories or our you should have done it. Each person has experiences and systems of meaning, places they need to begin in order to change, to collaboratively write a new story. Contributions from neuroscience. As late as 1996, neuroscientists at the University of Parma in Italy noticed that certain neurons fired when a monkey performed an action, specific neurons. And they also fired in exactly the same way the analogous neurons in the monkey who was observing that action. This was revolutionary at the time and provided a brain basis not only for empathy but also social connection. Mirror neurons are not specific cells in the brain but a function of actual networks in different parts of the brain to reflect the feeling and behavior of others. Mirror neurons help us directly and indirectly sense and resonate and imitate actions and create experiences. Stick out your tongue at a newborn baby, the baby immediately is going to return the gesture. A baby smiles and the parent smiles back. Mirror neurons are instrumental in acquiring and developing empathy, language, and social behavior. This mirroring activity explains how children download beliefs and behaviors beginning in the first years of life before there are words in a language. Later, for example, we experience and take in how our parents, for example, handled money, the messages, behaviors, attitudes, biases, meanings, regard of money. And also, our clients are taking unconscious notes from us while we're talking about other things. How comfortable and how confident we are as a professional. And to continue with that example, to charge what we're worth, to engage empathically and fully. Mirror neurons help us understand emotional and social contagion. Mirror neurons enable us to empathically understand and appreciate another's point of view and to see how others see us, a kind of self-awareness. Now, the brain has an error detection mechanism. This can be important as we're helping a client look at and develop a way to understand and create change. Our brains detect changes in the environment and send strong signals to alert us to anything unusual. This error detection mechanism is right over the orbital cortex, right over the eyeballs, and closely connected to the amygdala that registers emotion. So what most of us do each day is habitual. We do something, we repeat it, it gets hardwired. We drive to work the same day. After doing that for a month or so, we can do it automatically without thinking about it, listen to an audiobook. Now, to change any of these habits take energy. So the brain's going to resist doing that. There's an error detection mechanism that's designed for self-preservation, for continuity, and for minimizing energy. When you drive to work and suddenly there's construction, you have to snake your way through the neighborhood, it takes energy. You can't focus. You can't concentrate. You have to depart from what has already been grooved as behavior. Now, think about your client. This is going to apply to every client you work with. Each time they take a step in a new or different direction, they're going to get a little bit of a register of discomfort from their error detection mechanism because that's not what was expected. That's not what they've been hardwired to do. So this is important for two reasons. One is, if they interpret this discomfort as, well, my gut's telling me this is not the right thing to do, or my intuition says this is not right, their read is correct, but their attribution is incorrect because they're attributing it to an actual intuition or a gut sense when it's simply their response to change. So this is what's helpful as you're working with a client to recognize and help them recognize, to empathically resonate with the uncertainty, the trepidation, the difficulty, even the anxiety of doing something that's different and unknown, so that you can help them frame it as progress, as going beyond where they've been before. This is a juncture. We're going to return to this. Our brains can't tell the difference between anxiety and excitement. It registers in exactly the same way. So how you frame it will determine how you proceed. If you frame it as anxiety, that means danger, protection, better head for cover, a different mindset. If you frame it as excitement, as challenge, as opportunity, you engage it in a different way. It engages a different mindset, a different part of your brain, creates the possibility of new neuronal connection and networks. So how you frame it at that instant of the experience determines how you're going to proceed. This is what our expertise is in coaching, helping someone frame an experience, to recognize it and frame it. Now, some examples of the error detection mechanism. It can explain a lot of phenomena. It's why the media focuses on bad news. It gets our attention. We're problem-focused. It energizes us. In fact, I think that's the most common addiction we have as people. is you get two buddies together, you have a glass of Chardonnay, and suddenly one of them gets really animated telling about some problem or some situation they've had, and the other will join in and counter with their experience of that. That activates and energizes. So it's tempting to return to the familiar. Even though it has no future, it may have a glass ceiling, but it's still known and familiar. And repetition can masquerade as effectiveness. So this is what you'll need to think about with your client. This is why, for example, with every new client I began in mentor coaching, I ask at some point, usually during the first session, may I interrupt you at some point that I feel it might be helpful for both of us to look at that instant at something you said? So that is a way, as soon as somebody takes a couple of steps into that well-grooved cycle, that without a collaborative look, you know, 12 minutes later, they've come to really define the problem that they've repeated because they know exactly where they're going and where they're going to get to. It's why a road incident makes people stop and stare. It's unexpected. It demands attention. This is the error detection mechanism. The error detection mechanism activates the brain, not in a pleasant way, but it activates. It's why people can easily name the things they do wrong, and they may struggle to list their strengths. We notice difference more easily than new experience or confirmation. So here's a practical application of that. A gap in performance has more to do with mindset, state of mind, than with intelligence or motivation. That's just to get your attention. We're going to come back to that and devote much more time to it. So in mentor coaching, this means that even when someone wants to change, is willing to change, the brain is triggered to be on guard when changes are introduced, and especially when they're put into action. This is why we usually need to avoid giving advice in coaching. The advice is unfamiliar and reflects or results in uncertainty and an error detection mechanism response. And if we give advice, as I mentioned at the beginning, somebody's going to compare what they already know or believe. If it fits, they're going to confirm it. If it doesn't, they're going to refute it. They're going to be even more entrenched. So we have to take into consideration why a client may reject an idea even before appraising it. During coaching conversations, we highlight or challenge a client's hypothesis at times. We may want to look at how they're coming to a certain conclusion, to look at and engage their reflective functioning so that they together with us can develop that capacity to self-reflect and examine. So here's a summary then of what neuroscience teaches us about mentor coaching and facilitating change. People have prior knowledge that affects how they hear and respond to new information. The prior knowledge is physical, real, and persistent as neuronal pathways in the brain. If we ignore reality, it will get in the way of new information and change. And partly because it's complex and partly because it's subjective reality, people are not always aware of their prior knowledge. This is the 90 to 95% of the operating system. So here are just a couple of overview aspects that I think are important. Contributions from quantum physics. Quantum physics helps us understand energy fields and adds how the activity of an observer affects what we observe. This is very close to what psychoanalysis calls the intersubjective experience, how two people in a relationship and a dialogue create a third entity of that co-created experience. Quantum mechanics offers the notion of systems theory to understand a change in any one aspect of the system catalyzes change in the entire system. those of you who have done work in corporate or organizational settings will see this. Whenever you introduce change, everything in the system reacts to it, usually initially by opposing it. It also is very evident for those of you who have had experiences in being in a family. There's always the pushback pressure. This is understandable. Now, here's what quantum physics can teach us in a practical way. The power is in the focus. Thoughts have a frequency and energy field. If you want to change anything in your life, change the frequency, change the channel. So here's a simple application. Your unconscious doesn't register positive or negative, just the focus. A print or negative is the same image. Your unconscious is that image. Dr. Joseph Murray put it very simply. Your unconscious mind does not argue with you. It accepts what your conscious mind decrees. If you say, I can't afford it, your unconscious mind works to make it true. So here's the application that I think Einstein offers us something. The law of attraction offers us something. The law of attraction is based in quantum mechanics. If you lay a nail and a paper clip side by side, nothing happens. But if you take a magnet and stroke the nail several times from head to point, it becomes a magnet and can pick up the paper clip. Why is that? Well, the molecules of the nail have become aligned in the same direction. Same with your energy field. When all of you is going in the same direction and focused, you have power. What you're doing with your personal energy field is part of your story. Now, the paradox is we don't attract what we want, but we attract what we focus on. You know, everybody wants more money, so wanting is not the key to having it. Focusing on scarcity attracts scarcity. Focusing on prosperity aligns your energy field to pursue prosperity. Now, here's where Einstein had a contribution to mentor coaching. He called it the unified field theory. Basically, he said the mind and body are bundles of energy that interact with another person's energy field, and there is an interaction of those two energy fields. Same with an individual and a group. The energy field of the group. If we have time, I'll tell you how I've done demonstrations of that in workshops and live presentation. But here's a very simple example of that, the energy field of the group. A natural experiment. The NBA plays 84 games, each team, 84 games, 42 away, 42 at home. Every team wins more games at home, and every team loses more games away. Negative energy field of 70 or 80,000 people, most of whom want the team to lose, when the visitors to lose. Same with the home team with winning. So this is how we can resonate with someone else, to be attuned to and resonate with their energy field. This is our intuition, and I can tell you, it happens just as effectively by telephone as it does in person or even video conference. In fact, I believe in some ways it can work better by telephone because you don't have the visual distraction that you do in person. I did this for 25 years in psychiatry psychoanalysis in person. I do video conferences now. I prefer, and I usually don't offer an option for clients, but I'll say we'll work by telephone and include that in the recommendation because I think it works even better because you don't have to be physically present. You just have to be very grounded and centered, present in that way. So here's a couple of contributions from social psychology. We're embedded in networks of friends, families, coworkers. Here's a classic experiment. You probably have heard of this. Dr. Nicholas Christakis, professor of medicine at Harvard, studied social networks of 12,067 people for 32 years. he found that clusters of friends show an infectiousness, a contamination in the induction of everything from obesity, unhappiness, drinking, smoking, exercise, to happiness, healthy diets, saving money for the future. He shows how your location in the network can impact your life in ways you're not even conscious of. For example, if your immediate circle of friends is obese, your risk of obesity is 45% higher. If your good friend becomes obese, it increases your chance of becoming obese by 57% in the same time period. Now, here's the zinger. If your good friend's friends are obese and you've never seen any of them, your risk is 25% higher from people you don't even see. So, what might create this contagion? Well, one possibility, mirror neurons, how emotional attitudes, states of mind are contagious. An example, a recent study at Princeton used brain scans to find that one person telling a story to another person, whether physically present or done just in an auditory way, the other person, when actively and empathically listening, their brain patterns begin to synchronize. Their neural activity mirrors each other. If the listener fails to comprehend or disengages, the synchrony of those brain patterns immediately decouple. Now, here's, you may not have expected this, or you may have, some contributions from Buddhism. Buddhism teaches us that when one area of the brain is engaged, other components will not be engaged. When we want to relax and stop thinking, we engage the right hemisphere and we stop talking and thinking. Further engagement occurs by focusing on feeling and experiencing the body as a unified whole. That leads to a process that we can use for mentalization. Mentalization is awareness of the mental states in ourselves as well as others. The awareness of these mental states can be extremely helpful in understanding someone. So one aim of the mentor-coaching relationship is to enhance the mentalization process for our client as well. So this is why it may be helpful and really, really beneficial for both you and the client to do a brief mindfulness meditation or relaxation exercise or just some grounding and centering right before you accept a call from a client. So there's a growing body of neuroscience research that confirms the power of examining our thoughts, our feelings, our experience to become more mindfulness of ourselves. This mindfulness is a mental mode of engagement in the present moment without evaluating or reacting to the situation. In fact, if you think about what is a very simple model of focus? Remember, we get what we focus on. It aligns the energy field of the brain. A mindfulness meditation is the application of a focus just on our breathing. We focus on our breathing, relaxation of our body, our breath going in and out. If we have a thought, which we inevitably will because that's the job description of our brain, we simply don't engage it. If we're visual, we let it float away. We just don't listen to it. We don't engage it and refocus on breathing. It's an effective way to go to sleep at night. It's also the model of coaching. What's the first question you ask a client as you begin a session? What would you like us to focus on this session? And then, where would you like us to get to at the end of this session? So your first question is to create a focus. The second is to create a map. When you have a map, you know where you are, you know where you're going, You know how to measure progress along the way. You can tell what's detour and distraction. And you help the client develop that focus. You do it in a collaborative way. So this kind of mindfulness increases the number of neurons in the brain region that mediate attention, compassion, and empathy. It strengthens the immune system. It improves psychological function of insight, creativity, and productivity. So these are some of the benefits of the mentalization development, the development of our empathic resonance with ourselves and with our clients. And this is an example of that. The very first study, Emily Pronin at Princeton did a study of people who could visualize their future selves. What she found, among many other things, they saved three times as much money for their retirement because they could envision themselves in a continuity over time and see their older selves. And a recent study at Stanford, computer-assisted projection of aging helped people envision a future self, and it can affect whatever is measured. If it's smoking, if it's gaining a pound a year, the computer-enhanced images shows what that's going to look like 20 years from now, 30 years from now. So here's a summary now of science contributions. What each of these contributions offers is important to recognize as we integrate them in our work with clients. Psychoanalysis addresses coming to the end of the old story, but not how to strategically create a new story. Quantum physics recognizes the participation of the observer in the creation of reality, but omits motivation. Neuroscience illuminates workings of the conscious and unconscious mind, but disregards the spirit. Psychology helps us understand the developmental role of effectiveness and mastery, but remains silent on brain contributions. So what we do is bring an awareness from all of these disciplines together to apply and inform strategic coaching. That means what we have with clients, contingent, collaborative conversations. We know from a number of studies, asking the right question has more power than giving people the right answer. Appreciative inquiry can yield better results than seeking and solving problems. So this is what we do with our clients. We create new narratives, and we learn through stories. Now, remember when we're talking about the metaphor here of understanding the client's story, whether that's a life story, a wellness, a money story, a relationship story, the client is not experiencing it as a story. That's our metaphor. The client doesn't see it as a story. It's the way things are. It's their reality. So this is an organizer for us, not necessarily to teach or train or instruct a client, but for us to you. We learn through stories. Stories are how we understand and how we remember. It's a way to hold information and make sense of things. Defense lawyers know this. Little kids standing next to broken vases know this. Stories create personal mastery as well as connection with others. And we're hardwired to convert our lives into stories. Our narratives, the stories we tell about ourselves, both describe and then determine what we do. We become the stories we tell about ourselves. So the state-of-the-art neuroimaging and cognitive neuropsychology have demonstrated how we create ourselves, our sense of self, our identity, through narrative. Our left brain specializes in personal self-narrating actions and thought. The interpreter function is the glue that keeps our stories unified to create a cohesive sense of self. Why can't we tickle ourselves? Because the brain contains specialized circuits that distinguish self-generated and external stimuli. This allows us to distinguish between self and non-self. So, a successful resolution to a compromised story is to transform it by learning from it, to become wiser for it, more adaptive, to shift from repeating the old story and the programming that makes it automatic, to begin to recognize, own, and assess that story and decide what to change. Those are the first four steps in the system of the roadmap. We'll return to it. Recognize, own, assess, decide what to change. When patterns are broken, new possibilities emerge. This is our specialty as mentor coaches, breaking the script. We extract the lesson from the past experience to write a new narrative in a current context. The new story overwrites the old story, and eventually, with repetition, the latter disappears in its transformation. There's learning and unlearning in a parallel way. We'll come back to that. The past becomes a memory, like our lap when we get up to walk, rather than an active intrusion into the present. In other words, we remember in order to forget, to place the memory on a library shelf in our mind as a choice to revisit it. The story we use to guide our lives makes it easy to navigate, since our brains have created neurons and pathways for those habits to make them the default mechanisms to conserve energy. They're a little lattice work of models. Our stories orient, guide, and instruct. The narrative we construct navigates our lives. So, by recognizing, observing, and owning a life or money or wellness or career or relationship story, you can assess each component, each storyline, and decide what to change and map changes. That's what we'll develop as a system in the upcoming seminars. You can then author new beliefs, and then finally, the last step, the P of the roadmap, program the changes to transform your identity according to the new story. This is the hardest, but it's the most permanent thing. To make change permanent, it has to transform the operating system, the bedrock of our identity. So, I want to go, we don't have nearly as long as I'd hoped. I'm going to go off of lecture mode. If you'll manage the background, I'll see if there are comments or questions. Any clarifications, thoughts, or questions from anyone? Is this making sense to you, first of all?
Yes. Yes, it's amazing. I love the way you've broken it down.
Okay. So,
Dave, this is Brad Swanson from Maine again. I've often heard this approach described as compassion versus compliance. Compliance is do what I tell you to do, and you'll be just fine. Compassion is very much an understanding of what the process is that affects real change or helps people affect real change.
Okay, let me clarify because I think in that question there are two basic distinctions that are very, very important to us as mental coaches. One is the point of reference. With a client, we use the point of reference of the client's story. We're not instructing, guiding, getting someone to comply, telling somebody what to do. We are not consultants. We're using the client and their story to develop their own point of reference. The other is that the compassion, or I'll say empathy, because empathy is a scientific way of listening, as we empathically resonate with a client, that's how you get into that circle so you can go someplace new together. That's the beginning. empathy is not an end in itself, but a means to a better end, because we're doing that to collaboratively understand together with the client. And at the same time we're doing that, the client is downloading the process to develop a greater capacity to self-reflect, become self-aware, and ultimately, as we'll talk further, to self-regulate. So those are two very important components that I want to distinguish and clarify. Does that make sense in terms of your question?
It really does, and I appreciate it because it kind of expands the mental model for me, especially around compliance, the compassion component. I just, the empathetic approach makes a good deal of sense. And then
yeah.
Much
so by empathy, when I say a scientific way of listening, it's not giving or consoling or being compassionate. Or it's the antithesis of giving sympathy, because it's about listening from the client's point of reference. Giving sympathy that moves it to us. It's not about us. It's never about us. It's about the client.
Right.
So to resonate and to get inside the circle, we're not asking that stick figure to spring to life and come find us and join us. We are working to get inside that circle because that's what is going to be most effective and most meaningful for a client.
Yeah,
I know we're out of time, and I want to respect that. I will reserve more time at the end. But if there are questions that still remain, jot them down, and we'll begin there next time with a brief discussion at the beginning. So thank you all for all of your responses, the emails you've sent. Send responses if you have them. And I look forward to our collaboration. Thank you very, very much. Your responses to those questions do make a difference, and I am incorporating responses in our discussion. So that's why it may be a little bit difficult, as I mentioned, to track me on the outline, but I'll cover the important things. So thanks very much. Have a great rest of the week. Take good care of yourselves. See you guys. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Absolutely.
Bye.
Yeah.